Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 32, The Reunion, Text 10. Tabir Viduta Shokabir.
Tabir Viduta Shokabir.
Bhagavan Achyuto Vrita.
Bhagavan Achyuto Vrita.
Virochitadikam
Tata. Virochitadikam
Tata. Purusha Shakti Bhirita.
Purusha Shakti Bhirita.
Tabir Vidhuta Shokabir.
Tabir Vidhuta Shokabir.
Bhagavan Achyuto Vrita.
Bhagavan Achyuto Vrita.
Virochita Dikam Tata.
Virochita Dikam Tata.
Purusha Shakti Bhirita.
Purusha Shakti Bhirita.
Translation again. Encircled by the gopis, who were now relieved of all distress, Lord Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, shone forth splendidly. My dear King, Krishna thus appeared like the super soul encircled by his spiritual potencies. Om Ajnanachimidam Dasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militanyena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Abhunitananda Sri Advaita Gadara Sri Vasudhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. As you know, you are in the most intimate section of Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, the smiling face of the Lord. And then in that 10th canto, you are at the site of the Rasa Mandal, the Rasa dance of Lord Krishna. The most difficult to understand of all Krishna's pastimes. People are intrigued by the Rasa Leela. And they misunderstand it in so many ways. But, as we have heard, this event at the Rasa Mandal is inconceivable to those bound in material existence. What actually binds us in material existence? False hopes. As Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Asha Pasha Chathaya Bhada. The conditioned soul is bound by a network of hundreds of false hopes. Try to examine yourself and see how the false hopes to enjoy in this world and be satisfied, they are what cause you to stagger on in material existence. You've seen drunks staggering up the street. Conditioned souls are like that. They're intoxicated by their false hopes. They're blinded. They really don't know where they're going. So they stagger along in material existence, bound by these false hopes. So much of our purification in Krishna consciousness is about changing our hopes, changing our aspirations. Instead of having hope in material nature, hope in our material bodies and minds, we learn to have hope in Krishna. Hope in Krishna is never disappointed. Krishna is the most expert at producing loving reciprocation. Not only with the most advanced devotees, his gopis, but even with a neophyte, Krishna knows how to arrange your life to bring about the maximum spiritual production. Every devotee should be eager to see the hand of the Lord in his or her life. Never think that Krishna has abandoned you. If you are following Krishna's instructions, how is it that Krishna will abandon you? Actually, Krishna has not abandoned the non-devotees, those in rebellion. He deals with them indirectly through material nature, but he still deals with them. And constantly, the Lord is making efforts to rectify the situation of those in rebellion. So therefore, how and why should a devotee feel neglected? Krishna is not paying attention to me. Krishna is not reciprocating with me. Therefore, I need to, once again, take shelter of the material energy. Be satisfied. Be fulfilled. I need to get some self-respect by surrendering to the material energy. I need to be acknowledged. If you are just patient, as Rupa Goswami says we should be, as he writes in Upadeshamrita, Utsaha Nishtha Daryat. It's amazing, nectar of instruction, this book, Sri Upadeshamrita. You can read it again and again and refocus on the path back home after Godhead. Utsaha Nishtha Daryat, enthusiasm, patience, determination. These are the ingredients, three of these six ingredients for success. Without these first three, you won't get to the next three. Patience. That means you will see Krishna's hand in time, and you'll always remark, Krishna knew better than I did. When you have children, you'll find out that when the children become teenagers, they'll always think they know best. And then, if the parents are good, which is rare these days, by the time the child reaches the age of 28, mundane psychologists say, then the children begin to realize the parents knew best. Because at that time, the children have their own families and have to raise their own children. And their only point of reference is how they were raised by their parents. And then they see. Now we understand why our parents disciplined us. I know in Wellington, New Zealand, one young man came to Krishna consciousness. He was attending the university and then he fell in with the wrong crowd and doing the typical nonsense things that young people do today in Kali Yuga when their senses are uncontrolled. His parents were very respectable. They're very respectable, living in a respectable, wealthy area of the city. And the parents were shocked one day to see a police car drive up to their house and ring the bell and ask, where is your son? Imagine for a wealthy, respectable family in such a neighborhood to have a police car drive up to the house and ask, we're looking for your son. We just want to check to make sure. Is he at home? Or what is he up to? He's high on our suspicious list for rascal behavior. Parents are like, he was like, this is the worst thing that could happen to them. Then, by Lord Chaitanya's grace, this young man took to Krishna consciousness. And now he's just embarked on his brahmachari life. And during the year of his preparation for his brahmachari life, he would always beg forgiveness from his parents. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I put you through this distress. Please forgive me. I'm different now. Brought his parents practically to tears just to hear those words. I'm sorry. I was wrong. You were right. Oh, the parents come to the Gaur Yoga Preaching Center and they're just like, what have you done? What miracle have you worked? Whatever you're doing, we don't understand it, but just keep it up. they're just totally astonished. And again and again, their son is apologizing. I'm sorry, you were right, I was wrong. Like, these are like, this is like music to a father's ears, you know. He's in such anxiety about his son. And the son is ignoring him. You know, you guys don't know what you're talking about. Just stay out of my life. I'll do what I want. And then the son is repentant, you know, for a father. I could see the man. The father was like, it doesn't get any better than this. This is what it's all about. You know, that's all right, son. You've apologized so many times. Please, we accept that you're different now. When I was flying to from Wellington to Auckland, and this young man was also on the plane going to join the Brahmachari Ashram in the city there. And so the father actually came to the airport, and the father took the son and, you know, okay, he's yours. You take care of him. So you do what he said. Just think the emotions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead when we return to our senses. You all can remember when you first solidly took up Krishna consciousness. What an extraordinary day. Remember? It was like darkness turned to light. You had emerged out of the endless dark tunnel of Kali Yuga and landed at Krishna's lotus feet. Devotional service, that's Krishna's lotus feet. Sometimes, however, because of familiarity with the processes of bhakti, the deities are always here, the devotees are always here, you know, there's always something going on at the temple, there's always need of service. We lose our sensitivity for Krishna, which was so desperately regained. And we even start to think, Krishna's not doing anything special for me. In fact, maybe Krishna's disappeared from my life. He may be working for others. He may be revealing himself to others. But for me, where is Krishna now? I guess I have to develop other goals and other aspirations. Maybe I should have some semi-hope in material nature. Not complete, but some, you know. Keep a balance, you know. Can't put all your samosas in one basket. So one samosa in Krishna's basket, one samosa in material nature's basket. And then, you know, have everything covered. Be careful. Life is short. Krishna, for a devotee who is properly following his or her initiation vows, Krishna is always there arranging things. Just wait, you'll see. If you doubt, if you think Krishna is missing now, keep on chanting Hare Krishna, keep on with the five limbs of bhakti, you'll see Krishna will always reveal his hand, so to speak. See, Krishna knows how to produce the best love. The very thing that we want the most, and in fact, the very thing we think we are the most expert at, love, Krishna, inconceivably surpasses our expectations, our predictions, our preconceptions. You just have to have some patience and enthusiasm and determination to see this. Look at the situation here at the Rasa Mandam. Krishna apparently has left the gopis, causing them such pain. This pain in separation that the gopis were feeling, it cannot be described. It is so intense. But is it material distress? Let's look at the first line of this verse. Tabir viduta shokabir. These gopis were fully cleansed, viduta shokabi, of their distress. Now, how can they be Krishna's most intimate devotees and they have to be cleansed, purified of distress? But this distress is not material. It is a further spiritual development of their pure love for Krishna. In fact, it's the highest development, love of Krishna and separation. The so-called distress is the prema agni, the fire burning of love of Krishna. That so-called pain is pure love at its most intense. At its most intense expression. It cannot be understood by conditioned souls. At least understand that there's not one tinge of material distress in this pure spiritual distress. The spiritual world has all the varieties. Therefore, distress must be there in the spiritual world, but the distress is blissful, just like the pleasure is blissful. This is Advayagan, knowledge of non-duality. There are varieties in the spiritual world, but they're all equal in their effect. They're all Satchitananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Whether it's so-called pleasure or so-called pain, everything simply leads to an increase in love of Krishna. This is the nature of the variegatedness in the spiritual world. So it takes much advancement in Krishna consciousness to understand the distress of the gopis. But by hearing about it through disciple succession, your understanding of the spiritual world is awakened. You are introduced to the emotions, the pure emotions of the spiritual world, the pure variety. Just think of the scene where you're at right now. It is nighttime in Vrindavan, in the forest. Moonlight is gently illuminating. The leaves of the branches and creepers are swaying in a soft breeze. In that soft breeze is the fragrance of so many night-blooming flowers. The bumblebees are buzzing in that soft breeze, thinking that the sweet fragrance from the flowers in the air is honey. This is the spiritual world. Everything is perfect for Krishna's pleasure and the pleasure of his devotees. You cannot understand Krishna without his devotees. You cannot understand his devotees without Krishna. Therefore, the Shastra explains that Krishna apparently looks more beautiful in the association of his devotees. As you hear, the gopis are Lord Krishna's internal potency, and therefore when they were relieved and happy again, the Lord shone forth even more brilliantly than before, and his transcendental bliss increased. That the Lord's transcendental bliss increased, does that mean there was some lack? Some emptiness? Something missing? No. Krishna is always Om Purna, perfectly full. But the nature of perfect spiritual fullness is that it's dynamic, it's not static. Impersonal Brahman is static. Therefore, you can talk about the peak of spiritual happiness in reference to impersonal Brahman, because there's definitely a ceiling there. But the pleasure of bhakti is constantly increasing. There's no ceiling. There's no peak. So it's very inappropriate to talk about the peak of spiritual happiness in relation to Krishna's pastimes. There's no limit. In ordinary language, people say, oh, the sky's the limit. That means you can go as far. You cannot. There's no ceiling over your head. That's only true in Krishna's pastimes. Everything just keeps increasing. Krishna's beauty, the gopis' beauty. The more one becomes beautiful, the more the other becomes beautiful. It's eternal competition. The devotees do something to satisfy Krishna. Then Krishna does something to satisfy his devotees. On and on and on it goes. That is the spiritual world. Non-stop dynamics going on eternally. Ever increase in beauty. Ever an increase in giving pleasure to one another. This is that same Krishna whom we don't trust. It's amazing how hard-hearted we are. Where does that hardness in the heart come from? Sinful activity. It produces these lumps of stone in the heart. And therefore, you cannot be effective in your devotional service Devotional service, to be effective, requires affection, conscientiousness, sacrifice, a soft heart. But it is a fact that by determined execution of devotional service in this very short life, your heart will become soft. We should long to give up our rebellious spirit, our detesting of insubordination, our detesting of subordination. We should be very eager to throw this off. Recognize in the heart what's causing the problem. I don't want to be subordinate. I don't want to be subservient. I want to be the master of my situation. Just like Krishna is in the center of the Rasa Mandal, I want to be in the center, surrounded by my potencies. Everything should act to give me pleasure. Everything should be adjusted perfectly. Isn't that a holiday? You pay money, so everything is adjusted perfectly. And the resort areas, they're promising, you know, we'll make your pseudo-spiritual world for you. Just pay us enough. Everything will be adjusted. And you work like a dog all year long so you can pay for a week or two of the pseudo-spiritual world where everything's adjusted for your pleasure. This is our madness. Watch yourself and see how much there's still in the heart of this insubordination. I'll do it my way. I can please myself. I'll make my mark out there in the world. Your main treasure in life, regardless of how you're going through your particular ashram, different styles, your main treasure in life always has to be devotional service. When you talk about Lord Chaitanya, when you are glorifying Mahaprabhu, you are referring to the Lord's distribution of love of Krishna. What does that mean? It means Lord Chaitanya freely distributed the opportunity to serve Krishna. By serving Krishna, you can even conquer Krishna. So when you talk about the flood of love of God, remember, you're referring to the flood of devotional service. The more that in your life you cherish devotional service, the more your life is progressive and dynamic. And you'll see Krishna's hand in your life. Bhakti is a career. Think how you're going to go the distance in Krishna consciousness. The Krishna conscious lifestyle means a lifestyle of devotional service. That devotional service begins with the tongue and then involves all the other senses. Now, the next line is Bhagavan Achyuto Vrita, the Supreme Personality of God and the Infallible Lord. Always remember why this name Achyuta is there, used frequently in the Rasa Lila section of the Bhagavatam. The Lord is infallible. He's not engaged in the material activity. He has not come under the control of Rajagun, mode of passion. Even surrounded by the most beautiful women in all the material and spiritual worlds, he's still infallible. There's no question of any taint from material nature. You are hearing of activities of spiritual bodies. The gopis they're purely spiritual. Krishna is purely spiritual. There's no matter. There's no trigunamayi. It takes us some time to become accustomed to this. But by hearing properly from authorized sources, your consciousness will indeed become attuned. Just think, Bhagavan Achyuto, the supreme possessor of all opulence. He's a chuta. He never falls under the control of his illusory energy. How can it? How can that happen? How can the Lord be victimized by his own energy? He's promising you in Bhagavad Gita that if you surrender to him, you'll cross over his illusory energy. So how is that same Lord going to be tinged by his illusory energy? His energies may act in various ways, but the Lord is uncompromised. Now, in the last line it says, Purusha Shakti Bir Yata, the supreme soul with his transcendental potencies, Shakti. Vedanta Sutra says, Shakti, Shakti Mato Abheda. There's no difference between the Shakti, the potency of the Lord, and the possessor of the Shakti. Krishna is identical with his energies. But then again, he doesn't lose his original personality. So, you cannot understand the Supreme Absolute Truth properly unless you understand the potencies and the possessor of the potencies. When people think of God, they generally think of something very vague, some energy field. Maybe 50 years ago, they would think of God as an old man with a gray beard. Now, things are more technologically advanced, supposedly. So people think of God as an energy field that generates randomly all sorts of parallel universes and so forth. This is how they speculate that. Now, you cannot understand God without understanding his Purusha, person, with Shakti, potencies. Even a tiny thing like you, you have potencies. You have some Shaktis that you can set into action and accomplish things. Krishna is the possessor of unlimited Shaktis. So, these Shaktis may be acting in a certain way. The material Shakti is present in the material realm. But that doesn't mean Krishna is affected. We must remember this point. Now, impersonalists have concocted that there is simply Brahman. In order for them to push their theory of monism, they have to insist there is no energy and energetic source. Everything is just one. Everything is just Brahman. Therefore, they have a problem in considering the material world. How can the material world be real when it is temporary and full of suffering? If the material world is real, because everything is one, everything is monistic, then Brahman is disturbed. Well, that can't be. Therefore, there's only one conclusion. The material world is false. Brahma Brahman is truth, the material world is false. But, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to the Mayavadi sannyasis, the material world is the Lord's energy. How can it be false? But that the material energy is temporary in terms of its manifestations and has its difficulties doesn't mean the Lord is affected by it. You have to discriminate between the energy of the Lord going through its transformations and the Lord himself. Very nice example Srila Prabhupada gave was a cow and milk. The milk is the energy of the cow. In that way, the milk is non-different from the cow. Without the cow, there's no milk. But if you boil the milk, have you boiled the cow? This is a Chincha Veda Veda Tattva. Srila Prabhupada was so expert in presenting the most deep and esoteric philosophical points in such a strikingly powerful way that you could grasp. That you have boiled the milk doesn't mean you have boiled the cow. The cow has its potencies. You can play with the potencies of the cow, but you haven't touched the cow. Similarly, if you kick this microphone, does that mean you've kicked God? Impersonalists, with their crazy nonsense, they get people to think that. Ultimately, people are thinking, if I'm happy, God is happy, because it's all one. No, you are the potency of the Lord. You can think any kind of crazy way, but it doesn't affect Krishna. You are his potency, but he has his own identity. This is why it is such an important point to understand that the absolute truth has potencies. I wonder how many of you think about this point. The Upanishads state, Parashya Shaktya Vipadaiva Shuyate. The absolute truth has multifarious energies, shaktis. That means the absolute truth is aloof from the activities of material existence. The shaktis are arranging everything, the energies, but the Lord is aloof. Now, you take away the reality of the Lord's energies, and then you say everything is monistic, everything is one, you'll never understand. And you have to conclude the material world is false. It can't really exist. Otherwise, Brahman, the oneness, would be disturbed by illusion. You go through all these gymnastics in your mind simply because you don't accept the absolute truth has potencies, and his potencies are acting in various ways. Now, this Rasa Leela, once again, you have Purusha and Shakti, the supreme enjoyer, the only true male surrounded by his Shaktis. That's what the gopis are. Don't think that Shakti energy is impersonal. In the spiritual world, all the energies surround the Lord in their original status as persons. In Vaikuntha, even the impersonal Brahman is at the feet of Narayan as a person. So what is the question of ultimately anything being impersonal? So this Rasa Leela means the Lord and his expansions, his pleasure expansions. In this way, Krishna is completely self-sufficient. He's not going outside of himself to enjoy. He's enjoying with his energies. As we often explain, what happens when you try to enjoy? You have to go outside of yourself. There's a risk. You're going outside of yourself. You have to associate with others, depend on others, believe in others. You're going to make me happy, right? Yes, yes, I'm going to make you happy. You venture into the outside world to uncover some treasure and get robbed and cheated in the process. You have to go outside of yourself. You have to depend on others. It's a very, very fragile situation. For Krishna, it's not like that. Even he's surrounded, if you want to count, Vishastra says, in this Rasa Mandal, he's surrounded by 3 billion gopis. You want to take the time to count them. Of those 3 billion, 16,000 are most important. Of those 16,000, 1,000 is most important. Of that 1,000, 108 are most important. Of that 108, 8 are most important. And of that 8, 2 are most important. Of that 2, Srimati Radharani is the most dear. These are potencies of the Lord. As you sing every morning, Lakshmi Sahasrasata Sambharma Sevyamanam Govindamadi Purusham Tamahamajami. The Lord is surrounded by unlimited goddesses of fortune. In the Vaikuntha planet, there are the Lakshmis. In Goloka Vrindavan, there are the gopis. Krishna is not beautiful by himself. You've heard that expression. Then you might think, ooh, there's a way that Krishna is not beautiful. He's not very attractive when he's alone. That's right. But is Krishna ever alone? The supreme enjoyer, is he ever alone? Never. So Krishna is always beautiful because he's never alone. You're alone sometimes. You don't like it. You want someone around to understand you, someone to talk to, someone to believe in you, someone to interact with. So sometimes you're sad because you feel lonely. Even when you're around other persons, you can feel lonely. Latest sociological surveys show that although people are communicating more than ever before via email, internet, instant messaging, text messaging, they are more lonely than ever. They have less real friends than ever before. Everything is so superficial, hype communication. But there's no real lasting relationships anymore. The numbers are way down. Krishna is never alone. His beauty simply increases eternally in the association of devotees, his devotees. You are understanding the conclusion of all knowledge. This is Vedanta, the end of all knowledge. The Lord and his potencies, that means at its height, Krishna surrounded by his most intimate devotees. And in that intimate group of devotees, there is variety. You think Krishna has all the same type of girlfriends? No. Variety is the mother of enjoyment, and the variety in the spiritual world is endless. So, as you probably heard, in the first verses of this chapter, you were introduced to the submissive gopis of the group of gopis who are very reverent. They always do what Krishna says. They're very submissive, docile. And then, in verses 6, 7, and 8, you're introduced to the rebellious gopis, the ones who like to give Krishna a hard time. Why? For his pleasure. Even in mundane existence, men will tell you, you know, they like it sometimes when their wife's a bit feisty. It just kind of, you know, puts a bit of spice in the day. Not all the time, but sometimes, you know. Yeah, they like to see a bit of, you know, rebelliousness there, just to, you know, just to enjoy it. Completely submissive all the time. It seems to be very nice. It gets to be a bit boring. The man wants to feel he's conquered. Even though you're feisty, I'm still the boss. It gives you something to, you know, stick out your chest about and feel egotistical. Yeah, she's got a lot of spirit, but I'm still the boss at home. So, all these tendencies are there in material existence because they're there perfectly in Krishna. So Krishna doesn't simply have submissive, docile consorts. No, he has the other kind too, the rebellious ones. You heard how one gopi just stared at Krishna with loving anger, biting her lips, staring at him with frowning eyebrows, as if to wound him with her harsh glances. Just think, try to bite your lip and stare with frowning eyebrows. That's a real meditation. Actually, this verse is referring to Srimati Radharani. But they know Krishna enjoys this. Never was there even a second in which the gopis ever gave up on Krishna. No matter how Krishna treated them, they were his unconditional servants. They may talk in so many ways. Let's give up Krishna. Let's stop talking about Krishna. What is the use in dealing with Krishna? He cheated us in so many ways. Krishna did this. Krishna did that. We want him out of our life. We don't want to talk about Krishna anymore. We don't want to hear about Krishna anymore. He's off with the girls in Mathura. He doesn't care about us anymore. He doesn't care about us. We don't care about him. We're not going to talk about him anymore.
I don't know how to go.
Now, for a second, could they take their hearts away from Krishna? But you're seeing the variety in the ocean of Krishna's loving affairs. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that in verses 6, 7, and 8, you're introduced to the gopis on Radharani's side, in her group. You have Radharani, and then Lalita and Vishakha. You heard that one gopi took the Lord through the opening in her eyes and placed it within her heart, and then she closed her eyes and continuously embraced the Lord within. In this way, she resembled a yogi meditating on the Lord. Actually, the acharyas put out, there's no way you can compare this. But just to give you some glimpse, the example is given of a yogi meditating on the Lord in the heart. Actually, when this particular gopi, she took Krishna into her heart through her eyes, then she closed her eyes as she's embracing Krishna within. Why did she close her eyes? She's thinking, Krishna is very tricky. He may try to escape through my eyes, so I'll close them, keep him locked up inside. Now, when the Lord appeared amongst the gopis after the separation, he was dressed in his yellow cloth, Pitambara, and he's wearing a forest garland, and he's smiling. Why is he smiling? He apparently has caused such pain. He's smiling to enliven the gopis. Actually, he feels their pain, but he's smiling to charm them, to recapture their hearts. It's not that Krishna is insensitive and didn't notice the gopis were suffering in the fire of separation. But the Lord knows what the nature of that fire is. He did it on purpose. Later you'll read how the Supreme Personality Godhead said, "Don't think I was away from you while you were wandering in the forest, searching me out. No, I, from a hidden vantage point, was watching you go through your fire of separation. I did all this, I arranged all this, just to increase your love." Now, ordinarily, you'd be very angry if someone did that to you. Suppose you told your wife, "I'm leaving." You left, and then she's at home grieving, crying. But you're recording everything on a secret video camera. It's possible these days. Easily, you can buy a video recorder, you know, that looks like some little hidden gadget in the house. You know, they're very cheap these days, and you can record everything. What happens in the house while you're gone? So, suppose you did that. "I'm leaving." You disappear. She collapses on the floor crying, "Oh, my whole life is ruined. I have no husband anymore." And then you're recording it all on camera. Then later you come back and you play the video recording. "Oh, just see how much you were grieving for me. I only did this just to increase your feelings of separation. You wouldn't dare do such a thing." But Krishna does it. He's the most confident lover. He's the most expert at loving. He does exactly the best thing for increasing the love. He'll even apparently leave you brokenhearted just to increase your love. This is how confident Krishna is that what he does is the best. But just to make a point, some of his consorts are giving him the heavy eye, the evil eye. You think, not evil eye, but just, "Who do you think you are? Why did you do this? How can you treat us like this?" But that's to give Krishna pleasure. And later Krishna will explain, "I did this to increase your love. By your love, I'm captured. I'm under your control." But please remember the point about the absolute truth having potencies. If you don't understand that basic Upanishad Vedanta Sutra principle, you won't understand Rasalila. It is the Lord and His potencies, Parasya Shakti Vividaya Vishuddhite. These are His most intimate potencies, His Bhadini Shakti, His pleasure potency in action. All right, any questions? Yes.
Only one comment. Krishna is perfect in everything. Perfection.
Real perfection is shown in loving affairs. Yes? Yes, and of those eight, two are most prominent.
Okay. But this is nine verses on one.
You can add in different ways. Just like here, Bhadra, she's of the eight, but she's not described here. So, there's always technical points. You just remember, you know, there are eight, and of the eight, two are most prominent. Of those two, one is most prominent. Yes?
I'm curious, last time you spoke about the importance of weeding our devotional gardens and in response to someone's question. What's the process for removing the weeds which seem very difficult to pull out?
Like what?
Like maybe things that keep springing up obstacles in your spiritual life, or that they keep coming back, or
like what?
Like contemplating sense objects, I guess, contemplating things that you enjoy in the past.
Contemplate how you actually enjoyed them. Think about it. Was it actually pleasure? Analyze in your mind with your intelligence, like a scientist. Okay, I did this, and I did that, and then that. Was that really pleasure? Analyze why it is the illusory energy is attacking you in this way. Analyze the proposition. That's why it's good to develop scriptural intelligence, see through the eyes of the Shastra. That way you can become immune to the attacks of Maya. You know how to analyze the proposition. If you're walking down Swanston Street and it's evening time and some stranger comes up to you, hey, why don't you come with me? I got a good deal for you. What would you do? You would analyze the proposition. Wrong time, wrong place, wrong person, forget it. So you have to learn how to deal with Maya in that way also. Analyze the proposition. You know, when she broadcasts into your skull, Munichari, do you remember? Yeah, I remember how hellish it was. I remember how I thought I was going to enjoy, how my problems would be solved, how I'd get relief, how I'd get satisfaction, fulfillment, how I'd feel like I was Lord of the Universe, how I thought I would be loved and I would love. Yeah, I remember all that. Get out of here. All right, good.